Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear. Happy birthday to you. Well,
this is what Mr. Titov says. He says, it's been a year since I last visited Russia, and so I was curious to see how attitudes had changed since then. Equally important was to see for myself how the war has changed life in Russia. And then he goes on to say this: the first surprise was how normal life was. Despite all the media reports of doom and gloom as a result of Western sanctions, everything works just as before. Domestic banking is working, salaries and pensions are paid on time, ubiquitous e-commerce is bustling with activity, the shops are stuffed with food and consumer goods. In St. Petersburg, at least, I've struggled to notice any change in daily life compared to January 2021. He then goes on to say that digging deeper, the impact of sanctions is there. One issue that kept popping up was spare car parts, which have become noticeably more expensive. But even there, new supplies are being shipped now. This goes pretty much for everything else consumer-oriented. There's no shortages, even of Western goods such as whiskey. The supermarket shelves are fully stocked, and he's provided photographs. He's then provided a picture, photograph of a supermarket in St. Petersburg. And indeed, one does see lots of pictures of all sorts of whiskey brands that I'm familiar with. The famous Grouse is there, Grants is there, Johnny Walker is there. They're all there, apparently. And then he goes on to say, EU travel restrictions have had their effect, but nothing like the measures introduced during the pandemic. People can still travel to many countries, including Turkey, Egypt, or the Gulf states. And business people complain of facing difficulties, particularly those in the import-export centre. But after a few months of chaos, business has been finding new shipping routes via third countries, such as Turkey or Kazakhstan. An acquaintance who works in a defence-related sector laughed at the suggestion that Russia could run out of missiles. He told me the defence industry has been stockpiling essential parts for years and is also using more locally sourced alternatives, although this is a claim I am unable to verify, well, for obvious reasons. The rest can still be bought, albeit at inflated prices. Their real problem is not a lack of parts, but the capacity to scale up production to meet growing military orders. So they have all the parts they need, they just lack the factory space, which, by the way, is probably being expanded. And then Mr. Titov goes on to say, the general impression from conversations with people in different businesses is that their main focus is on adapting to the new normal. Many things will be less efficient and more expensive, but the Russian economy will not collapse. If this is a crisis for Russia, and then Titov says that it is, I don't see how, based on his own reporting. But anyway, he goes on to say it's nothing like the turmoil of the early 1990s when the state, society and economy were all collapsing at the same time. And he discusses at very considerable length the mood in Russian society. He says that there is a very much a peacetime feeling about the mood in Russia, and that people don't particularly want to talk about the war. And this has made him conclude that the topic of the war is not one that most Russians are keen to discuss. I'm going to say straight away that I strongly suspect that this is wrong. I follow Russian media, I read Russian Telegram channels, I get the impression, contrary to Mr. Titov's impression, that in fact the Russian public is extremely interested in the war and is following military developments very closely. And if you look at Russian opinion polls, you see that though President Putin's popularity rating remains consistently high, it does rise and dip with almost precise correlation to the progress, apparent progress or lack of it, over the course of the war. I suspect that it's more a case of people being reluctant to talk about the war with somebody like Mr. Titov, who's just come from the West, even though, as I said, it does seem as if he probably has a Russian background. But anyway, he then finishes this interesting article by saying the following: "My distinct impression from 2 weeks in St. Petersburg is that Russia's society and economy is still nowhere near to being fully mobilized for the war effort." I'm sure that's true, by the way. I'm sure that there's an awful lot more that the Russians could do and will do if they're pushed. For the moment, I suspect that the calculation is that they've done enough. He then goes on to say, "While the partial mobilization in September and October last year brought the war closer to home, it involved a relatively small percentage of the population. From all of my acquaintances, only one friend of a friend was called up." And he goes on to say that barring huge military setbacks leading to a really extensive mobilization, it appears that life on Russia's home front is carrying on fairly normally. And he then says, and this is perhaps the most interesting part of the article, "One of the biggest lessons from my trip is the huge gap between representations of Russia in the West and what you see when you arrive there. The gap in perception is likely to increase because of the lack of people currently traveling there from the West and the suspension of professional and academic links. Important as they are, reliance on comment from anti-Putin activists in exile or those remaining in Russia and still active on social media won't help, as they're marginalized at home and lose contact with Russian reality while abroad. The fact is there is no substitute for seeing things for yourself. I found my recent trip to Russia stressful, but I'm glad I did it." Now, I have to say, this is consistent with everything that I am hearing, that in fact, the economy has shrugged off the sanctions, that the Russian economy has continued to function successfully, that there's no crisis in military production. In fact, all the indications are that military production is being cranked up, and that there are no shortages of consumer goods, and that there's certainly no shortages of food, and that financial stresses, such as one might expect in a crisis situation, expressing themselves, for example, in much higher inflation, that financial stresses do not exist. That article that appeared a short time ago in Bloomberg that implied that it was only unsustainable increases in military production that were propping up the entire Russian industrial economy is wrong. And I think that reporting of the situation on the ground essentially confirms that. Now, that brings me back to that fascinating interview by the French sociologist Emmanuel Todd that I discussed two programs ago, or at any rate very recently. And Todd makes the point that in reporting about the war, there is this assumption that the outcome of the war is existential, is of existential importance to the Russians, but to no one else, certainly not to the West. And Todd, who has a much more keen understanding both of the global perceptions of this war and of the economic aspects of the war than is common amongst, well, far too many Western commentators, says outright that this is wrong. Now, again, I'm relying here on the translation of Immanuel Todd's interview that I've been provided by a viewer, but this is what he says, and I think it's important, and I'm going to read out these comments in full. And he first of all talks about John Mearsheimer, the American academic and realist and writer on international relations, and Todd agrees with him on many things, but then he goes on to say that Mearsheimer, like a good American, overestimates his country. He considers that if for the Russians the war in Ukraine is existential, for the Americans it is basically only one game of power amongst others. After Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan, one debacle more or less, whatever. The basic axiom of American geopolitics is we can do whatever we want because we're sheltered in the distance between two oceans. Nothing will ever happen to us. Nothing would be existential for America. Insufficiency of analysis, which today leads Biden to a headlong rush. In other words, Biden thinks this, the entire American political class thinks this. They don't see this conflict in Ukraine as existential for the United States. It's existential for the Russians. Everybody accepts this. But it's not existential for the United States, and which is why the United States has blundered into this conflict, or not blundered, but why it's launched, found itself in this conflict and is acting in the way that it is. But that is actually wrong, that this was a major miscalculation made right at the outset. And Todd goes on to say, America is fragile. The resistance of the Russian economy is pushing the American imperial system towards the precipice. Nobody had foreseen that the Russian economy would hold up against the economic power of NATO. Well, I'm going to say, not quite true that nobody did. I did say back in February that the Russians would withstand the sanctions. And at the Duran, we were very isolated in that view. Most people expected that the sanctions would be devastating. We thought that the Russians would come through. Having said that, even I, as I'm the first to admit, did not expect that they would come through so painlessly as they have. But anyway, moving on from that, Todd then goes on to say, if the Russian economy resists the sanctions indefinitely and manages to exhaust the European economy, whilst it itself continues to be backed by China, then American monetary and financial controls of the world will collapse, and with them the possibility for the United States to fund their huge trade deficit for nothing by, in effect, in other words, printing dollars or borrowing in dollars, American dollars, from the rest of the world. This therefore has become existential for the United States. No more than Russia, they cannot withdraw from the conflict. They cannot let go. This is why we're now in an endless war, in a confrontation whose outcome must be the collapse of one or the other. Chinese, Indians and Saudis, amongst others, are jubilant. Now, I think Todd overstates the case. I don't think that failure in Ukraine is going to result in the immediate collapse of the dollar-based global financial system. I don't think we should fall into the trap of thinking it in quite that way. But as I have said before, if the Russians are able to withstand the sanctions shock and come through it unscathed, as all the indications are that they are doing, then the Russians will have exposed the most powerful instrument that the United States and the Western powers have in their arsenal in order to coerce other countries to follow their line, which is sanctions, that instrument is losing its effect. Obviously, there are things about Russia which make Russia more resistant to sanctions than other countries. But then again, as Todd correctly says, that was not the widespread assumption when the sanctions were first imposed. And whilst I don't think that this will cause an immediate crisis in the world system, I think over time, and I'm not talking about a long time, I think the effect of the Russians pulling through and emerging from the sanctions war unscathed and intact and with an economy that's increasingly resilient and self-sufficient and reoriented towards other trading partners, well, that is going to have a major effect on international relations, including international economic relations. And of course, if there is a Russian military victory in Ukraine, as I have no doubt there will be, well, that is going to have an even bigger effect on the international standing of the United States. And we've seen two articles just coming up which lead to the conclusion that the Russians will come out of the sanctions war intact. Firstly, that Bloomberg article, the Russians are not finding any problems in exporting their oil. Their oil exports, their seaborne oil exports, are now back to April levels. And we also see from Mr. Titov's experiences in St. Petersburg that the shops are full, e-commerce is buzzing, there's no obvious shortages, even spare parts for cars, which for a time were difficult to come by, are now becoming available, and that military production, far from becoming exhausted or running out of missiles or anything of that kind, that that's able to keep going and keep going almost indefinitely, and that in fact capacity issues are the only problem, and no doubt those capacity issues will be resolved as the war continues. So we come back to that fundamental mistake that was made a year ago. A year ago, the Russians suggested a compromise. They proposed to the Western powers to draft treaties to try to stabilize the political situation in Europe, the strategic situation in Europe. They tried to basically talk the United States out of whatever long-term and indeed short-term plans in Ukraine that the United States had. And of course, they found that the United States was not in any way accommodating. Ray McGovern, the former CIA analyst, the man who used to read the daily brief to the President of the United States himself, Ronald Reagan, and I believe George H.W. Bush. He's pointed out that in a readout, the Kremlin said that President Biden, over the course of a conversation that took place about a year ago, told Putin that the United States had no intention of establishing missiles in Ukraine. And the Russians appeared to see that as a possible basis for further talks. But that when, a short time later, the Russians, after that conversation, followed up by trying to enter into substantive negotiations on that very issue with the Americans, they discovered that Biden's words had absolutely no meaning and that the United States was not prepared to enter into any sort of commitments about the deployment of missiles in Ukraine. And Ray McGovern says that this was perhaps one of the key moments when the Russians decided that the only way forward was for them to take the action that they did over the next few weeks in Ukraine. So, think about that. The United States took all of these measures. They looked the other way. As it seems, Ukraine started to intensify its shelling in Donbass. They refused outright to discuss the question of Ukraine's eventual NATO membership. They hid behind this non-existent principle that any country that wanted to join NATO had a right to do so. As I said, that principle does not exist, and there is no glimmer of it anywhere in the Washington Treaty, but we were constantly told in every media outlet in the West and from every government official that I can remember that this was a fundamental principle that could not be compromised in any way. Wasn't true, but that was what they said. Well, look where it's led. Look what people like Todd are saying, and as I said, in full agreement with him there. It's led the West, it's led the United States into a confrontation with the Russians. And it's a military confrontation on the Ukrainian battlefields. And as I've discussed in this program and many other programs and many others, Colonel McGregor, Brian Beletic, Scott Ritter, all sorts of people have discussed that military confrontation on the Ukrainian battlefields is not going well and things are going from bad to worse. And that's something I will turn to again in my next video. But on top of that, there's been this overarching economic conflict, this attempt to use the sanctions weapon to break Russia, break it once and for all. And what has happened is that the United States, its jaw has closed and it's breaking its teeth. Maybe not quite existential, or if you prefer, existential for the American empire, for the American global position, for the grandiose ambitions of the neocons and of their allies in the American deep state. Perhaps not existential for the United States as a country, but nonetheless, surely not what the United States had planned. Well, there we go. War is a very unpredictable thing. It's not something one should ever enter into lightly. The United States entered far too lightly into this conflict. It didn't think it through. It overestimated the sanctions that it would impose on Russia. It underestimated the blowback it would have on the European and global economy. It misunderstood the way in which the war itself would play out, and it finds itself in the crisis that Immanuel Todd has so well and discussed.